Awesome. Welcome back to another edition of the Digital Digest with your girl Ace. Today we have with us esteemed author Rasheed Darden. How are you today, Rasheed?
Hello, Ace. I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm awesome. Rasheed and I graduated Coolidge class. I think you're actually class of 98.
I'm class of 97, actually.
Oh, class of 97. Wow. See, I was trying to, you know, add you to the youth, you know. But thank you so much for helping me build this platform. I'm extending an invitation out to authors like yourself to talk about your publication, different projects you may be a part of. So won't you go ahead and take a few minutes and let people know who you are and what you've accomplished up to now?
Well, great. Thank you so much. I am a native Washingtonian. By day, I am a teacher. By night, I am an author. I got started as a writer. Well, as a writer, really, I was in elementary school. DC Public Schools, way back in the day, had a program called Scholars in the Schools. And we had a relatively well-known local poet named Elaine Magarel, who has passed away, but not that long ago.
Wasn't she the DC Poet Laureate for some time?
I am not sure that Elaine was ever DC's Poet Laureate. That I'd have to do some research on, but she was definitely on the scene. She was a little white lady who kind of lived in Glover Park or Georgetown, and for years and years, and sort of gave back in this way by coming into the schools and doing poetry workshops.
Nice.
And really, from then, I decided, wow, you know, if this lady can do this full time in a meaningful way, maybe I can too. By the time I got
how old were you then? Around what age?
Have been 10 or 11.
Wow.
By the time I got to Coolidge, I was writing 50-page short stories and novellas. Yes. And by the time I got to Georgetown for undergrad, I, you know, was writing a lot of different things and trying to figure out what kind of writer I was going to be, whether it was going to be plays, whether it was continue to be short stories, whether it would be poetry. And ultimately, because I had pretty good mentors at Georgetown, I decided that I would be a writer of book-length fiction. So,
okay. How did you come about to that decision? Or even more so, because this is, I consider myself a writer, but not, you know, to your level of accomplishments. So why was it important for you to decide your genre? Why couldn't you just write about any and everything?
Well, I think that it's possible for some people to be great at a lot of different styles. And that, I mean, that applies to music, that applies to visual art. Mm-hmm. For me, knowing what kind of craft I wanted to practice would allow me to figure out what kind of preparation I would need for the lifestyle. One of the reasons I didn't want to be a poet is because, let me back up. I still love poetry.
Awesome. And we're back after a little technical, but we're going to keep the conversation going. Today we have with us Rasheed Darden, who's an esteemed author working on, this is your third or fourth book, Rasheed?
The works I'm coming out with this year are works number 6 and 7.
Oh, 6 and 7. So I'm late. So back to the beginning of our conversation where we got cut off, where you were saying, you know, you chose this specific style of writing, more novellas, because you saw your body of work fitting into that particular style or genre. Right. And I was trying to get a little bit more clarity as to why as a writer, I mean, I guess I feel like you're a writer. You can write whatever you feel like and, you know, use your craft and ability to put words together and without whatever style you choose. So why did you have to kind of pick one?
Well, I'd say that at that stage in my career, I wanted to focus on what I was feeling best at in that moment. and get really good at that thing in a field that I felt was less crowded than poetry was at the time.
Yeah.
And because I had a lot to say, and I think people that have a lot to say probably should be writing novels. And and that's what I did. Now, to be fair, one of the works that is coming out this year is an anthology that does have more than just fiction. There's short fiction, there's poetry, there's essay, and there's a short play in there as well.
Okay. And is your website the oldgoldsoul.com?
That's correct. My website is oldgoldsoul.com, and it's been that for, I guess, about 15 years now.
Okay. All right. So do you still update this site? Do you have it just like as an index?
Well, it is updated less frequently as it used to be, but I still will post a blog entry. I try once a month, at least every couple of months. And it is a hub for all the things that someone needs to know about my work and how to contact me.
It looks pretty interesting. It looks pretty up to date. You know, I wouldn't, you know, working as someone in, you know, someone from the digital field, I wouldn't be able to tell, you know, that it wasn't like that is not something that you update, you know, at least once a month. But it looks awesome. Right.
Thank you. Thank you. One thing I'd like to share with your listeners is, you know, it really helps to learn how to do things on your own. There have been times where, you know, I've gotten price quotes for $1,000 to redo my website, $2,000. And, you know, when you are self-published, you know.
Oh, you said publish.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Okay. I'm self-published. And that was for really artistic reasons, but they grew to become economic reasons. Now, it is important to pay your contractors and to find good contractors that can do the work that you can't do on your own, but you can do it on your own. You should learn how to do it on your own, and it saves so much money in the long run that you can be using to reinvest in your own career.
True. All right, now looking at oldgoldsoul.com, I remember when you launched Birth of a Dark Nation. I want to say that was around 2009 or so.
That was 2013, Birth of a Dark Nation.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe you were leading up to it or talking about it, because I remember early on when I was on Facebook, and I got on Facebook around 2009. I remember early on, I was like, oh, wow, Rashida's, you know, published author. This is huge, you know, because we actually were in high school around the same time. So that was definitely an encouraging and motivating factor for me, seeing people that I went to high school with doing great things. I'm like, okay, you know, feeling like I'm jumping in the double dutch rope, like, what am I going to do now? So
Well, thank you very much for that.
You're welcome. To see, you know, the people that you grow up with, you know, being who you knew they could be in high school, you know, it definitely inspires hope. So here I see you have Birth of a Dark Nation, Time, Epiphany. So
Time is the anthology that's coming out this year. Lazarus, Covenant, and Epiphany are the novels that preceded Birth of a Dark Nation. So those first three are in the same genre. And then The Life and Death of Savion Cortez is my book of poetry, exclusively.
Okay, nice. So are these individual pieces? Did you write them as like a sequential series, or, you know, can you tell us about the installations in your body of work?
Sure. So Lazarus came first. Lazarus was written before I knew I was going to be self-published. So when I, let's say, the first draft of Lazarus was complete in 2002, I began querying literary agents, and I'm not one of those people that went out and queried 100 agents and got 100 no's. I stopped at 10. Every piece of feedback I got suggested that I was, you know, a good writer, but that the agent themselves, their feedback was, well, I don't know, you know, you've written a good story, but it's an LGBT story. We feel like Elin Harris has the market cornered on gay Black novels. And they said, you know, there's still homophobia from certain bookstores. And, you know, we really just don't know if we're going to be able to represent you.
And what year was this?
This was in 2002, 2003.
Really?
There was, let me tell you something about the bookstore market back in those days. And those agents were correct, because mm-hmm. I did experience homophobia from one particular bookstore chain that is no longer in existence. So Oh, yes. Here's the thing about writing as a business. Mm-hmm. The people that make the most money on writing are all already famous. We're talking right. Snooki from Jersey Shore can get a ghostwriter mm-hmm. and have mm-hmm.
you're and talking. Make it seem like she just wrote this book, you know, in a week or so, and the whole time they just have a story already canned for her, just put her name and picture with it.
Exactly. So those are sure bets for the publishing houses. Stephen King is a sure bet. He's going to make $1 million off of anything he publishes, and it's worth it because he's a good author. So what's challenging is for people that have something new to say, unique to say, or are saying things that might be
that
similar.
Nobody else is saying.
Well, yeah. And in my case, Elin Harris, who, you know, I adored up until the day he died, who, you know, fantastic author, but by no means is the only gay Black voice in literature. And let's be real, by the time Invisible Life had come out, I guess I was a sophomore in high school, he was already telling stories that were a bit dated and weren't really in line with what I would call the hip hop generation's experience of gay Black life, or even just Black life, right? So I can imagine that an agent whose job it is to make money would look at someone who was at the time 22 years old, 23 years old, and say, wow, this is good, but it's not going to crack into that Elin Harris, you know, kind of popularity. So I have no ill feelings toward any agent that said, I don't want to be the person that fights homophobia in the bookstores. I don't want to be the person that has to work that hard to make this money. The blessing is, or was at that time, that as a gay Black man, I knew where other gay Black readers were, because I am one.
A part of the community, of obviously. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So for me, you know, and then going to, here's what changed my mind and made me decide, let me try the self-publishing thing. Okay. I went to DC Gay Black Pride in 2004, and I sat in the lobby all 2 to 3 days of this event, and sat with a novelist named Brent Dorian Carpenter, who himself had like 3 or 4 novels out. And, you know, he had this raspy voice, and he kind of talked like this, kind of remind you of a California guy, you know, always wore sleeveless shirts and was, you know, real handsome dude, but always had a lot to say and always had his books next to him. So we were just talking about it, and I talked about, you know, how I wasn't able to secure an agent, wasn't sure what I was going to do next. And he said, you know, baby, all you got to do is publish it yourself. That's how Elin Harris started. That's what I'm doing. I'm out here making this money. Mm-hmm. And I said, huh. And I saw that he was doing brisk business. Mm-hmm. And I, by Pride of the following year, I was sitting right next to him in the lobby selling my books, making this mm-hmm. money, getting all this support. And it was just, I'm the kind of person, I need to get that advice. I need somebody to sit down and say, here's how it works. And that's how it worked for me. If you know your audience, there's almost no need for a traditional publishing house ever.
Mm-hmm. That was awesome. That was an awesome bite. Like, I can, even though I'm not a gay Black man, I can relate wholeheartedly. Like, you know, when you're not offered a seat at the table, you know, bring your own chair, you know. Yes. That's kind of my takeaway from that. And yeah, you know, the fact that you didn't go on a whole outlandish thing just to bring down publishing houses or agents, you just took matters into your own hands and kept it moving. You know, it's always the path of least resistance that gets us to where we're trying to go. So
absolutely,
that's awesome.
Well, and
go ahead.
I have a quick second story that, you know, with another gay Black writer that helped me when I was sort of...
Well, before you, before you get into your second story, while we're still on this topic, with that being said, how does it work with self-publishing? So if another author, maybe within your community or outside of your community, came to you, would you then be... All right, and we're back. We're going to continue the conversation. Technical issues here. Conversation got cut short. I was asking, how does it work? All right, so when you become a self-publisher, is that only to publish your own work, or is it in line with developing your own publishing house?
Well, there, those really are two of the ways it can be done. So for me, I am not interested in being a publishing mogul. And there are those authors who do want to do that. For me, it's about taking creative control, distributive control of my own work, and building on my own brand, building on my own readership. Exactly. I think that, you know, there are a lot of good, especially now in 2019, there's a lot of good, I'll say, supportive companies that will either do the work of publishing small authors on purpose, kind of like an all-in-one service, get editing, cover design. And then there are those companies where you can get a la carte services, where all you might need is editing, or all you might need is a cover designer. I hope to use those services a little bit more, and they've been pretty good. For my cover designers, I do prefer to go external and find up-and-coming designers and illustrators to do those, primarily Nordics.
Nice. And what words of encouragement do you have for young authors or those that may be interested in, you know, going down that path? What are some things that they should look for when they're getting responses back from agents to kind of determine if you should go your own route or not?
Well, I would say that if you are dead set on having a traditional publisher's life, then you must have patience, and you must keep going until you find that agent that will take a chance on you, or that publishing house that will take a chance on you. Look for writing retreats, look for writing conferences, really immerse yourself in that lifestyle if that's what you want. If you know that you don't have the patience yet, and more importantly, if you know that you know who your audience is and it is a niche audience, then by all means, take a look at self-publishing and decide whether you have the entrepreneurial mindset to see it through.
Awesome advice. So back to the releases that's coming this year. So how is it that you're putting out so many releases in 1 year? Has this ever been done before?
If I had to do it over again, I would most certainly be doing it one at a time.
Okay. So what changed from your normal model, or what made you choose something different?
Well, so Time was originally not on the schedule for publication. The other book that's coming out this year is called Yours and the Bond, and it's a novel. Okay. And it's kind of a follow-up to my first three in the Lazarus series.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about Time. I see it here, but, you know, it's nothing like hearing it from the creator.
Sure. So Time is a collection of so I'm a Prince fan, and I'm obviously also a David Bowie fan.
Right.
Time is the name of a David Bowie song.
Right.
And the works in the book, among the works, one of them is a tribute to David Bowie, just an essay that I wrote. Another is a short story that's about a David Bowie fan. And all throughout the stories are some sort of references or homages to the life and the work of David Bowie. But it's not just a fan work. It really is autobiographical, and it really is a greatest hits and B-sides, if you will, from my own career. Okay. So it's very much about the last 20 years of my life.
How did you do this in poetry format? Because I'm thinking, like, it'd be easier if you were doing like a chronological story timeline. So how was it that you were able to manifest this in the form of poetry?
Well, the good thing is I had a lot of poetry in the vault already, if you will. So I had a lot of stuff that I hadn't previously published. Mm-hmm. And in the last couple of years, I had been inspired to write a little more poetry than I had been. Mm-hmm. So it really wasn't hard to go into the vault and pick things
and
that
just
went
put it together in a theme.
Exactly. Made it work with the theme that I was trying to share.
And doing that, did it take on a form of its own, or did you really feel like that you were taking your thoughts and streamlining them to, you know, put the big idea out there?
I definitely felt more like a curator this time. So mm-hmm. I definitely felt like I was choosing the right art to mm-hmm. display to tell one right. story. Mm-hmm. And that's not something I'd done before, and I was not secure in it, but mm-hmm. the early reviews from some of my readers have been suggesting that that it does exactly what I want it to do. So I'm very happy with that.
And what was that you said when you say it does exactly what you want it to do?
I wanted to tell my story mm-hmm. in a way that is impactful to other people. Okay. I wanted people to understand that they're like, you know, my 20 years as an adult, really, or over 20 years as an adult, which matches what my writing career has been, mm-hmm. it has not always been filled with confident moments. It's come with depression.
Really?
It's come with, oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, Black men and Black people, really, and our mental health, mm-hmm. we don't seek help early enough. Mm-hmm. And it's been a blessing that I'm kind of a pretty reflective person in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I allow myself to be impacted by art. And I'll, for example, being Mary Jane, the mm-hmm. television show, has done a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I mean, so imperfect a character, but perfectly encapsulates, mm-hmm. you know,
her
stories
thoughts.
To be exactly. Mm-hmm. So I've allowed myself to be impacted by good art in a way that allows me to reflect, but not in a way that replaces a therapist.
Right.
So, you know, in the midst of me getting myself together, I think that my story is very much, you know, like a VH1 Behind the Music. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like that. And I would never imagine that. As much as I see you out on social media, like, I know you're pretty, you know, I don't know. I kind of see the duality, but I see it in us all. Like, I know you're compared to most of my social media family, you're pretty much conservative, you know, graduating top of your class in Georgetown, top of your class at Coolidge, all of these esteemed accolades. But at the same time, you know, you're a disruptor as well. And, you know, I feel like a lot of people on social media, like, they kind of play it safe, and you're not one of those people. Like, you're the guy that's going to kick the poet in your mouth the way, like, what the fuck is really good? You know?
Yeah.
So when I hear that from you, it's just crazy because you think you know, because we're on social media so much and connected through social media on a daily basis. Like, I
right.
would have never imagined.
Well, I think, you know, in addition, I grew up with social media, right? In terms mm-hmm. of, you know, not having it in high school, getting on chat rooms and message boards in college, and the ad Facebook was not that long after I left college. So mm-hmm. I was able to sort of come up digital age in that space. Mm-hmm. So I definitely am not afraid to be raw in those spaces. Mm-hmm. But even the most raw artistic people still have other layers to their story. So I peeled back a couple of layers for time, and I think it came together nicely.
I mean, this is definitely like one of those case in points where they, you know, where you, it's one of those things where it's like you think you know, but you have no idea. Like, this is definitely a aha moment for, you know, check on your strong friend, because like I said, I would have never imagined. So tell us more about the life and death of Savion Cortez. Now, is this a alter ego of yours? Because you're saying this is your autobiographic depiction, correct?
Well, so Time is the one that is mostly autobiographical. It's the anthology.
Okay.
The Life and Death of Savion Cortez was a companion book of poetry for the Lazarus Covenant and Epiphany series. Savion Cortez is a character in those three novels.
Okay.
Who is a poet himself. But, and I guess, I don't know, I guess it's not necessarily a secret, but all of the poetry that Savion recites in the novels is, of course, my own poetry.
Okay.
And it wasn't written for the novels, it was already written.
Okay.
They were, when this people...
And you put this together. I said, this is deep. You put this together. Like, did you sketch this out and like flesh it out when you were putting this storyline together? This is an intricate storyline from your own poetry being the poetry of the poet in your book. So it's like, you're creating the layers here. Like, you're giving us the onion to have to peel back.
Well, yeah. And it's funny because a lot of people ask me, like, they'll read Lazarus, Covenant, and Epiphany, and they'll presume that I'm the main character. Mm. And I'm like, no, boo. I was Savion Cortez the whole time.
Wow.
I think that because this is, you know, Adrian Collins is a character.
Because he's the lead character.
Right, you know, and he's, you know, he's the big man on campus. I never felt that way. Mm-hmm. Even when I became an alpha, I didn't feel this, you know, this extra oomph that Adrian felt. I always felt like the poet that was in the background, in the shadows, observing everything, not really getting, you know, what he wanted out of life, but still, you know, still telling the story.
Wow.
And that leads us to the novel that I'm coming out with this year at some point. Don't ask me when.
When?
It's called Your
Dates. I want the Donald Trump shit over here.
Well, I'll tell you this. One reasons that I haven't committed to a release date mm-hmm. is because unless you're publishing every year,
mm-hmm.
it is so challenging to get all the pieces in the right place.
Okay.
Without some kind of all of the technology.
Okay. So,
for example, the company CreateSpace, which is an Amazon company, mm-hmm. that's what I used to publish my first novels. Mm-hmm. But now CreateSpace doesn't exist, and it's more right. into Kindle Direct Publishing.
Yeah, I actually saw that. They like changed it right when I was in the middle of working on something. I'm like, okay, yep. They moved everything around. Like,
yep.
Amazon, this is not rocket science. You're not going to stress me out about doing a quick book, you know?
Exactly. So the reason I won't commit, and then, you know, I mean, I have to be honest. I've worked with a cover designer before that left me high and dry.
Mm.
And that's put back dates before. So I figure I'm going to try this Beyonce thing out. I'm going to just drop the book and see what happens.
You do it. Yeah, why not? You know, break tradition.
When it's done, and I'm not worried about the money per se. I'm not worried about making a splash. These two books, Time and Yours in the Bond, they were hard written, mm-hmm. hard fought, and hard won. And when it's time to push them out, they're going to be out. And then I can move on to a more regimented writing lifestyle where it's more like one book a year or one every other year or something like that.
Okay. Has writing sustained your lifestyle? Well, I know you say you're a teacher during the day and you write, you know, author by night. But would you say if you were to quit teaching that you'd be able to sustain your lifestyle through your writing?
Not at current levels, no.
At the current level, but based on your outlook.
I'm going to say yes. It's a tentative yes. But I do believe if writing was the only thing I was doing, then mm-hmm. I would also have the time to invest in the entrepreneurial side of writing.
Mm-hmm.
So that I would be getting the income from speaking engagements and, you know, having time to write more nonfiction, like, you know, there's a lot of stuff I want to talk about that is not of a creative ilk, like, right. you know, the public charter school system in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people ask me, well, when are you going to write about the kids? And I'm like, just wait.
Right.
Just wait. But I've got to. Right. I can't write it all willy nilly. I've got to have a plan for, you know, it's not just a tell all. It's going to be, you know, kind of prescriptive what we should be doing in this charter school system.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Greek life. You know, I want to talk about my experiences in fraternities and whatnot. But again, it's going to be a regimented sort of system with a plan and, you know, a business model. You know, this is the stuff they don't teach you when you're an English major.
Right.
Because they want... Well, because it's not... I'm not going to call it...
Shop that they make money off of.
What's that?
I said because of all of the seminars and workshops for authors and writers that they make money off of, you know, like, why give you all of that for your $40,000 a year, you know, when you can just come back and spend more money?
Well, there's that, and then there's also sort of, there's a snobbery with publishing. Hmm. These colleges and universities don't want to be known as factories of self-published writers.
Right.
They want to be known as, you know, we made the next, you know, Anne Rice or Stephen King or, you know, really even Evelyn Harris. So it doesn't really look good among academia if they're teaching their students how to do it independently.
Wow. I mean, how can I say this tactfully?
Well, don't say itself
is a platform, you know, for a machine. Yeah. So, of course, they, you know, these, I feel like, not in every sense and not for every person, but in some instances, colleges can become like mills. So, you know, to your
point, absolutely,
you know, why would they teach you to go out and be a free thinker when they're teaching you to how to go out and put more money into the machine?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, and I love Georgetown with all my heart, but, you know, I got what I needed from Georgetown, and I was able to transform that into what I needed even more, mm-hmm. which was a sense of commitment to the community, a sense of being a person for others, and a sense of really independence. You know, there's a reason that Georgetown doesn't have a school of education. You know what I mean? There's a reason that Georgetown doesn't have a school of engineering. And there are certain things that universities such as these find to be profitable. Mm-hmm. And there are things that some of these universities don't find as profitable. And I mean, I hate to go deep, but we're looking at these scandals of wealthy white people.
Oh,
you know,
that's, I don't know why you were like the first person I thought of. I was like, you know, if anybody could, you know, give us the breakdown, it definitely would be you, because I know, you know, your background in the teaching profession, as well as, you know, being a wordsmith, is someone just kind of in that upper echelon of society of knowing how certain things work and how certain people move. And you were like one of the first people that crossed my mind, because I'm like, Becky from Full House in a scandal? What planet is this?
Well, I mean, I think that the best advice that anybody can follow when thinking about scandals such as these, Detective Lester Freeman from The Wire said, follow the money.
Mm-hmm.
Follow the money. Don't follow the drugs. Don't follow the weapons. Follow the money.
Right, right. Every time. Every time. So, I mean, are you going to do, you spoke about speaking engagements. Are you going to do speaking engagements for young entrepreneurs or young budding authors as far as your giving back mission? Who is your audience? Who is it that you're trying to reach?
So, what's next?
Community, or is it only within the LGBTQ community?
Well, what I have found is that my most vocal supporters have been straight Black women. So,
yes, thank you.
I think that, but the good thing is, I get that support not because I pander to that audience. I write the best possible books that I can write. You know, when I have a Black female character, she's always reflective of the type of Black women I've been surrounded by, strong and supportive and independent. And, you know, but, you know, and not to get political, but I'll just say this. I have never been let down by following Black women.
Amen. So, thank you for that.
So what I intend to do next is I'm going to have these books come out. I am making some decisions about my professional life. Some decisions are being made about my professional life. And around June, I will know whether I'm going to be leaving DC to focus on writing full time in a rural North Carolina community, or if I will be staying in DC to continue my mission as an educator and figuring out ways to focus on one book at a time, or if I'll be doing both somehow.
What's the dream? What does your heart want?
My heart wants to be able to write, eventually to write full time.
Well, that's it. That's the only thing that should be in your line sight. That's it. You just confess what it is that you really want. Do you believe you can have it?
I believe I can have it, but I want to ask.
No, it's no but. It's ask, believe, receive. That's it. Don't complicate it. You know, I just got this thing down. It's a 3-step process. Ask, believe, receive. That's it.
Let me refine my ask then. I want to also
what you asked for, so make sure you got it down.
I also want to be able to be a positive impact on the lives of these students that I work with.
Yeah, and awesome. Of course you would, especially with the world being so connected digitally. Do you think just because you may not be in a classroom with them that they're not going to follow you on social, or, you know, tune into your blog, you know, tune into your YouTube page, just because they know that they've been direct, you know, you are their source, you know, when it comes to a part of their education, a part of their growing. So I think that's how communities grow. I think that's how grassroots movement starts. If you think about when we were in, when you think about marketing in general, you know, putting something out there in general, the older generation always copies off what the younger generation is doing because they want to still feel like they're young and popping. Right. So if you want to get a new artist popping, start playing it at kids' parties, you know, 16, 17, 18 year olds, 21 and under parties. You know, if you think about it, they were coming up giving us flyers for go-go's that we couldn't even get into when we were in Coolidge, you know, because what does that do? Send it back to the neighborhood and get that word of mouth spreading. So I think that is your community. Like, I think that is your blessing, being able to get in front of so many students, because they're going to follow you and they're going to tell their friends and so on and so forth. And then, you know, people start looking, liking, checking and sharing.
You're right. When you're right, you're right. I have no pushback on that.
Yeah, I thought that you were teaching because, you know, that was a part of your community that you wanted to impact. I seriously, after Lazarus, because it looked like by the response you were getting on social media, I did see a couple of sponsored ads. I thought like you were already, you know, kind of not completely a recluse, but I thought you were definitely in recluse mode and, you know, doing your own thing with writing. So what's next? You know, after you decide what in June?
June will be, you know, June is going to be the turning point no matter what. So what's next? The next creative work will be another foray into the fantastic vampire witch, what I call my Dark Nation series. So my next novel will be called, well, I won't drop the title just yet, but the next novel will be set in a school.
Oh, wow. Almost like a the vampire
I guess it's related in the sense that
Moonlight, Twilight, whatever.
Right. Well, you know, we were raised on books like that, right? And it's amazing to me that The Vampire Diaries is a whole series that is a whole generation away from when it was written. And the fact that, you know, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, for example. I mean, Sabrina came out at least in the 60s. And these works just find new life with new generations. But I think there's something interesting about setting paranormal things inside of a school, because you have these, you know, these youthful sort of eyes. And I'll say, rather than giving away plot points, I will say, just like Birth of a Dark Nation answered the question, what would happen if vampires were from Africa? Say that the next Dark Nation book will answer the question, what happens when your heroes are flawed to begin with? What happens when imperfect people are given perfect powers?
Ooh. Oh, good prelude to wanting to pick this up. So outside of oldgoldsoul.com, where else do you want people to look you up and find you?
Well, if you ever want to follow my career as a writer, as a teacher, my more cut and dry career, they can visit rashiddarden.com. And that just kind of gives you my community and educational kind of, you know, accolades and background. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram. Everything is at Rashid Darden. On Facebook, I believe it's at The Rashid Darden. And I'm really accessible. If you have my email address, feel free to use it. I don't publish it, but if you find me, then congratulations. But I reach out to me on media because there's just that extra layer of accountability. Because even though I'm not necessarily a well-known author, there have been people out there that have kind of reached out in pretty unprofessional ways. So I like to have that extra layer.
I mean, I guess, you know, people come from the internet, and we know the internet has its ways about
exactly.
So what type of support are you looking to garner from the community? Who would you like to get the most support from? You mentioned Black women, you know, is kind of a seamless parallel in how you connect with them. You're not necessarily pandering to them. Those are your natural supporters. But are you looking for sponsors? Are you looking for brand ambassadors? Are you looking for book reviewers? This is your time to, you know, let people know how they can join or support your movement.
Well, I will say this. I'm looking for three different types of people altogether, and I will be putting in the legwork to look for these people, and hopefully they're listening. First and foremost, new readers. Particularly readers that are young LGBT people or people that love young LGBT people. I want every young, queer, Black, gay, trans person to know my name, to know that I know their story, and that my job is to tell all of our stories. And for them to, even if they can't buy the book themselves, ask their libraries and ask their teachers to buy their books. To buy my books for them. The second group of people I'm looking for is the people that put together Pride festivals and put together literary festivals. I am more than happy to come sit on your panel, to moderate a panel, to be interviewed, to just come and vend my work. And the third group of people, Hollywood, yo. Like, I'm trying to get Lazarus as a TV series. Like, if my books about the college experience could be turned into TV series, and my vampire novels could be turned into movies.
TV is so terrestrial. We're in a digital, we're in a digital streaming network right now. TV is so terrestrial. So we don't even mention stuff like TV. We mention streaming. So Netflix, Amazon Prime, YouTube, Facebook, you know, these are all the platforms. We're collapsing the old world and we're building the brave new world. So we don't deal with network television. That sounds like old English.
I said Hollywood, and YouTube got Hollywood offices too. So
yeah, that's true.
That's all I'm
talking about, a TV show, a TV series. I'm like, TV? Hold on.
I hear you. But yes, I definitely want to elevate. I want to elevate my work in such a way that it is self-sustaining, so that I don't necessarily need to be in a director's chair. Mm-hmm. I love the Alice Walker approach, where Alice Walker writes the books and is consulted on the project on set. Mm-hmm. But I feel I know what my calling is, and it is to be a novelist. And I just want to make sure that I'm not pigeonholing my work. So
you just want to make it widely accessible, which is why it's great to, you know, connect your platforms, you know, and, you know, see how far around the web, you know, your work could go on its own, you know, without you trying, like you said, without you being the person wearing their conductor's hat.
So exactly. Exactly. But as long as I'm getting paid for my labor, that's what we're talking about here, because that's the investment.
And what advice do you have for young aspiring authors who may want to follow your footsteps?
Young authors who are as yet unpublished, should make sure that their work is the best it can be before they begin querying for business purposes. Mm-hmm. So write, you know, don't come to people when you have an idea. Mm-hmm. Come to people when you have a book-length work that is edited, that has had people's eyes that you trust laid on it, and then reach out. So, you know, take your craft seriously. Don't be a dreamer first. Don't even be an entrepreneur first. Be an artist first. Be an artist that's polished, and the entrepreneurship will come along. Because the same work ethic to be a good artist mm-hmm. is the same work ethic that comes with being a good business person.
Awesome. All right. Well, this is our edition for the author's installation for the Digital Digest. Today we have joining us Rashid Darden, an accomplished author, self-published author. You can check his work out on oldgoldsoul.com. And any parting words before we go?
I just want to thank you so much for this opportunity, Ace. I really, really appreciated it. And it's so good knowing that there are people that were, you know, in the community, in with me at Coolidge, you know, doing their thing. And it's just nice to know that years later, you know, here we are reaping the fruits of our labor.
Amen. Absolutely. I like I said, it's awesome that we're a part of this digital culture and that we're able to connect, because I literally found you when I was on Instagram at like 5 a.m. and one of your sponsor ads for a new project came down my feed. And I was like, Rashid. And I just got so super excited for you. Like you were already like this. And that's what I do, because now that I'm studying energy more and setting my intentions with my energy more, I knew just getting like, and it wasn't even a thing where I had to drudge up that energy and make myself fake excited. Like when I saw it, like my energy kind of hit the ceiling, like, Rashid, like you're doing it. You're going to do it. Go, go, go. Like, let me message him, see if he can get on the podcast. So absolutely. It's like I'm childlike when it comes to that ability to kind of put my ideas out there, put my faith out there, and see how far it goes. And just knowing that we're all connected for a reason, you know, regardless of how close we were in Coolidge or not. You know, when I got on Facebook, I'm like, hey, cousin, you know, like we barely say two words to each other in Coolidge. But to me, it's like when you come from that same ilk, you're automatically family, you know. So I'm so proud of you. I can't wait to talk to you again as the follow up on your projects and see what you do with this now that you know you're going full throttle.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate it. I truly do.
All right. And for anyone that wants to follow Rashid, you can find him on Instagram at Rashid Darden. You can find his website at oldgoldsoul.com. Also, you can find him on Facebook at Rashid Darden Novelist. And become part of his growing community. Support his growing community. If you're in the LGBTQ community, please spread the word. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we look forward to talking to you again. Everybody else, this is all our time for next time. We'll talk back soon. Peace.